Howard Schwartz is the Executive Communications Director of the Better Business Bureau serving Connecticut. He is a regular guest on Front and Center. And as always, Howard, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Dan. It's nice to be here.
It's actually a big week from a sales perspective because it is a sales tax-free week in Connecticut for certain items at a limit. What can you tell us about that?
It's a yearly affair, and what it does is gives us a break from taxes on clothing and footwear less than $100. And this goes through until Saturday. And essentially, this is for, it doesn't matter how many items you want to get. If you want to get 10 pairs of shoes and they're $99.99 a pop, well, you can do that. As long as you're not buying an item that is, a very expensive item that's over that, there's no negotiating that. So while the price of an item may start above the $100 taxable threshold, if there's a discount in the store or you have a coupon, you can't apply it. And therefore, the item becomes less than $100 and not subject to sales taxes that week. And this year, the state expects about $4.5 million in sales and use tax exemptions during the August holiday tax week. And you've got to hear about what's in and what's exempt from this list. The sorts of things that are tax exempt until Saturday include basic clothing items, shirts, pants, shoes, those types of things, but also antique clothing, golf jackets, jogging suits, lingerie, square dancing clothes, sleepwear, and scarves. I mean, that's just a sample. Garters are included, formal wear gowns. So it's a pretty extensive list of what you can buy. What's interesting are the things that are not tax exempt. And it makes sense. Things like lobster bibs. I don't think that's considered an article of clothing. Jewelry, martial arts attire, pot holders, not exempt, umbrellas, sports helmets, and ballet shoes and football, cleated football shoes, those types of things. So people, I'm sure, have tried at some point to pick up a pair of ice skates or a wetsuit and say, is this subject to the tax exemption? And they were told no, unfortunately. But this isn't just for back to school, Dan. It's also for those of us who'd like to start shopping for the fall. There is merchandise that's still left over from the most recent season. And it's even a way to buy some things for the holidays, which I'll pretend I was going to say, my goodness, they're so close. But we won't push ourselves into that. But you can do some shopping for yourselves or others for clothing and similar things.
Yeah, you know, Howard, you bring up an interesting point, and that is the exemption on the items that qualify, is it on an individual purchase or is it the total purchase? In other words, if the total purchase is over $100, do you have to pay a sales tax?
No, you don't. It's a question of individual items. As I said, you can buy many of the same product. What you cannot do is a retailer cannot sell you a suit and divide it into two separate parts, each the pants and the jacket, each of which come in under $100. That you've got to take together. And same thing with shoes. Obviously, you can't walk out with one shoe, but it's per item, and that's what makes it so attractive.
Oh, no question about that. Speaking of back to school, the National Retail Federation, the NRF, has new stats on how much students' families intend to spend more this year on students as opposed to previous years. How about talking about that?
Yeah, hopefully that speaks to people's confidence in the economy, and it's more proof that things have been turning around since 2008. Among the total spending among K-12 and college consumers is projected to reach $75.8 billion nationwide. Last year it was $68 billion. This year, $75.5 billion. And that's $75.8 billion. That's a considerable amount. And families are still looking for bargains, but there are signs that they're less worried about the economy than in the past. And the National Retail Federation says they fully expect to be retailers to be aggressive with offering great deals in both stores and online for back-to-school shoppers. And families with children entering kindergarten through grade 12 are also on track to spend an average of $630, $37, this is slightly over 2015. But it just goes to show you, for example, how much more it costs to send kids to college, because you've got so much more aside from the tuition. They've got to live on their own. So again, more money is being put in those areas. And the National Retail Federation does cite growing consumer confidence in the economy as probably the main factor in people spending more money as they get ready for back to school. And finally, even with there was a slight dip last year in sales over the previous year, the Retail Federation found overall spending among families with college students is expected to grow from $43.1 billion to $48.5 billion. I know that's many numbers and statistics, but all this is to say is people intend to spend more. And college consumers plan to spend the most money, $11.5 billion, and this is where it's more expensive than younger students because it involves electronics, and then $7.5 on clothing and dorm furnishings and so on. So while the young enjoy it, because the bills are going to go up, as any parent will tell you.
You've got that right. You know, it is interesting, though, because the figures which you quote, that is pumping a lot of money into the economy, Howard.
Tremendous amount. And if you believe the theory of trickle-down economics, this would be a good example of how if retailers are spending more, it means the manufacturers are producing more, and so on. It goes down the line. You've got businesses that will support those factories and those retailers. So yeah, this is good all around when this happens, and that's one of the advantages of an economic pickup. It's not strictly related to one store and their items. The merchandise all over, you're going to see pretty much the same thing, and that's very encouraging.
Talking with Howard Schwartz, Executive Communications Director of the Better Business Bureau serving Connecticut. Howard, getting back to these sales, and when you go into a store, can you negotiate some of these prices?
Well, that's interesting. Yes and no. We have the mistaken belief that when we see something on the price tag, that is it. You cannot negotiate. What we want to tell people is you can negotiate pretty much anything. I guess the first line to try would be, is this going to be coming up on sale within the next couple of weeks? Do you folks have extra? Are you expecting to have a huge number of people buying these? I'm a very loyal customer. I'm in here a lot. How can you fix this up for me? How can you help me? And I think negotiations, a lot of people are intimidated by the process. But what we don't realize is that we negotiate several times a day, 7 days a week. And simple examples would be we negotiate what to have for dinner. We negotiate with coworkers, bosses, and friends about getting time off. And, of course, then there's the kids again. Kids are very, very keen on negotiating, especially if it's for seconds of dessert or going to bed early. But those are the negotiations. And when we think of that, many of us are trying to bring down the price of merchandise or get something extra with the purchase. But it's not always like that. The dictionary, for example, defines negotiation as trying to reach an agreement or compromise by discussion with others. Now, it's not always about getting what you'll pay for a given price or service and saving money. Sometimes it's just about getting more for your money or lowering a service or lowering or eliminating a penalty. So, for example, if you have a home maintenance or repair project, once you get the estimate, take a look at the contract and look for areas with some wiggle room and ask for what is flexible in the project estimate. And in terms of when we have a dispute with the vendor, let's use the example of a wireless provider, but the model fits pretty much any type of business. If you see, for example, that you've been charged for a service you never asked for, you may get a credit for more than you actually paid for the unwanted service as a goodwill gesture. Sometimes it requires a supervisor's approval, sometimes not. And there are dozens of tactics negotiating tactics and ways of being diplomatic. And that diplomacy goes very, very far. And again, let's use the model of that wireless provider. If you want to get a better deal or your contract is coming up, watch your language. If you say something like, as you know, wireless is a very competitive business. I'm a longtime loyal customer, as you can see in my file. How can we make this a win-win situation? So you're negotiating there. You're saying, look, I've been loyal. Help me out here. And you'd be surprised how often they'll do that. I've gone on vacation and simply asked, can you give us an upgrade? And they say, yeah, we actually have a room on the fifth floor. You might like it. It's a bit better and a bit bigger. And again, if you don't ask, you'll never find out. You'd be surprised how much you can get from simply asking. So trying to do it in a nice way beats the heck out of telling them that you're going to go somewhere else unless they agree to your terms. Because that it's negotiating, and it's not dictating or threatening. So what you should do is just try it once, whether you're in a restaurant or somewhere else, or you mentioned the back-to-school shopping. If you know them at the store, ask them, again, if there are any sales coming up that they can give you the heads-up on, if there's any way that they can do anything to accommodate you so you can get a couple of the items. A couple of quick tips here. Listening is more important than talking when you're negotiating. There's what's called the 70-30 rule, and that means listen for 70% of the time and talk for only 30% of the time, and encourage the other person to talk by asking lots of open-ended questions that cannot be answered with a simple yes or no. Information is power. Salespeople, for example, will ask you your budget when you're going out to buy a car. Well, that tells them how much room they have to try and do an upsell. So reveal as little of your hand as possible, and you ask your own questions. You want to do your homework, find out on the internet what a given piece of merchandise is selling for. Very important, take your time. There are many cultures where they will smile, nod their head, and it doesn't mean that they agree with you, it means they hear you. And they're very, very patient negotiators, particularly as you go in the Far East. Well, you've got to give yourself enough time to talk, because if you're rushed into accepting a deal less than you like, then you've got a problem there. So time is power, and so is patience. And I suppose the last one would be, again, don't reveal your hand. If you're in negotiations for a new job, you don't want to tell the employer that you're in a desperate need of a job, because then they'll know that they control the entire negotiations. And the same thing if you go to a new car dealer and tell them that your car is trashed and that you urgently need a new one. And that tells the salespeople that you're desperate, and that will make them less inclined to bend. So the other thing, the final thing, is you have to be ready sometimes just to walk away rather than argue or get a bad deal. Because our greatest power is we just have to say no, and we should not be giving up that power.
No question about that. Now, among the things you said, which I find interesting, if you go to purchase an item and you ask the question, is this going on sale? But what if it is going on sale in 2 weeks? What does that mean?
Well, what that means is if you're very, very close to the store, or if you're very reasonable, you can ask them, you know, in some cases they may say, look, well, we can put it aside for you, can't help you out. But if it's a store that you deal with often, they may be able to cut you some sort of a deal. You'd have to speak to the manager or the supervisor, because that is on a case-by-case basis. But I do know people who've been successful in negotiating it in such a way that they're able to get it ahead of time. Of course, a store cannot charge you, cannot waive the paying of taxes ahead of time, but they do find ways of helping out somebody who ultimately would come back to the store, but perhaps might not have the time in a couple of weeks.
If an item goes on sale after you have purchased it, can you go back and ask for some sort of a refund?
You can, unless it's marked as a special discount or clearance. They will not accept those. And, of course, there are certain items of clothing that you cannot return, such as intimate wear, apparel, things like bathing suits and underwear. And that's understandable. And essentially, you can return those, like anything else. But if it's a slash down or at a deeply discounted price, that usually does not happen.
Howard Schwartz, Executive Communications Director of the Better Business Bureau, serving Connecticut, is our guest. Howard, it seems we live and die by our laptop computers mostly. There's still desktops out there, I'm sure. But that said, sometimes a computer gets infected with malware. What can we do?
Well, there are a couple of things we should do. First of all is the way the signs that your computer is infected is a computer might be sluggish. That in and of itself is not unusual, but if you find it's taking 3 or 4 minutes and that your programs are taking forever to load and your cursor is slow, it could be you've opened too many programs at once or you might be infected. Sometimes it's a silent killer. There are no signs. But other times you see performance changes in your computer. Now, some of the things you find out if you click on a link after doing a Google search on, quote, my computer is acting strange, end quote, the link will open to a different page in your browser, and you head back to your search results, try a different link, and the same thing happens. And you're redirected to a different site than the one you're trying to get. That means you're infected. Something is interrupting with your search function. If you find that your browser homepage has changed, that's another indication that somebody has hacked into your computer and is still there. Unfamiliar icons on your desktop, if your computer is constantly crashing, or if your web browser freezes or is unresponsive. And sometimes there'll be no sign at all. It's a stealth infection, if you will. But what we should watch out for is how these happen. And these happen from we get hacked when we go to a website we don't know and start clicking on links, or if we click on a link in an email or open an attachment in an email, that unleashes a virus. It can unleash a virus. It'll go into your computer. Watch every keystroke that you make on your keyboard, and then they'll know what your banking login and password is and all the rest of it. And the person might be around the corner in another state, country, or on another continent. What have we got to do to protect ourselves? It is be very skeptical about email that's from someone you don't know. Sometimes you may get somebody who is a friend of yours and their account has been hacked. Well, how do you know if it's a legitimate email from them or not? In my experience, if it's a friend, the subject line will just say, hi. There'll be no text, but a simple hyperlink in the email. Now, my friends like to use an economy of words, but they always write something in it. And if you just see a hyperlink with no explanation, that means your friend's email has been somehow compromised, and you can bet you're not the only person who's receiving that spam. And finally, we all have or should have anti-malware on our computers. It's not going to be much good if you don't update it and run a scan regularly. It's important because the viruses are ever-changing and morphing. And finally, you get the little bubble in the lower right corner of your computer, and it says there are some updates to install. Better Business Bureau recommends that you do install these because aside from improving functionality, many of these updates and patches address security issues. They might patch something in the operating system or in a program that has some sort of a piece of code that a hacker can exploit to get into your computer. So do those updates and give yourself a much better chance at protecting yourself and your personal information.
Now, you mentioned scan. How often should we scan our computers?
Once a week. I do it once a week. Some people do it nightly, depending how much they use their computer. But you can set it on automatic scan. And probably the thing that it's very, very simple, the best way to protect your information on a day-by-day basis is to make a backup of your important files. Backup drives cost nothing these days. You can get a huge amount of storage for under $100. And that way, if your computer is hacked, you just reformat it, load your stuff that you backed up onto the computer, and you'll be up and running again. But people don't back up. But if this happens to you, you're home free. You've got all your belongings there, your papers, your documents, and photos, and you won't have to look back. And if you're having trouble with your computer because you suspect you've been hacked or there's something in there, then bring it to an expert. And if somebody calls you claiming to be from Microsoft, Apple, Dell Computers, Compaq, any of those, and they say that there's a problem with your computer, just hang up the phone. It's a scam. They're going to ask you for money, and none of these computer companies would have any idea that there's something wrong with your computer. So watch out for that. That's a prevalent scam. It's the imposter technician scam.
Sure. Now, you know, it's interesting because there is some software out there that you can download for free that I guess is reputable. I'm thinking of Malwarebytes. I've used that for years, Howard.
Yes, there are quite a few free ones, and that's a good one. And there's a whole suite. If you were to Google, if you want free ones, you could look for free malware, anti-malware, or free antivirus programs, and they are wonderful. Not everybody wants to go out and spend a couple of $100s on a security suite, but definitely the one you mentioned is good. I've got similar ones at home, and I think that at this point, if anyone thinks they don't need it, they might be miscalculating about exactly how prevalent viruses are and the threats from the internet. And also be careful when you're clicking on links in social media. Social media are notorious for having infected links in there to take you to usually sensational photos, or they'll say there's a video of yourself that you probably want to see. You click on that link, well, you know what could happen to you. Be very careful.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to be diligent. I don't think there's any question about that. But as you say, there is reputable software out there that is for free. That would lead me to my next question. How do we know that software is reputable?
What I do is I will do a Google search. I mean, I know the names of most of the stuff. I read stories on technical aspects of our life all the time. But you, if you're going to type in something like free anti-malware, you get a bunch of hits coming up on the computer. The next thing I do is I Google the name of the company that makes it. Because sometimes there'll be other sites that will allow you to download the same file, the same program, and that's usually quite reliable. But occasionally you might download something that may have a virus. So what do? You can download it, and then you right-click and just do a quick scan with something like you mentioned Malwarebytes, and it'll look at that one file, see if there's anything in it that shouldn't be. And if it says nothing found, no threats found, then you're free to install it into the computer. That's the best way of going.
That's a great point, by the way. Sometimes some of this reputable software comes by way of another party, and you've got to watch out, right?
Yes, you do. And sometimes it'll come from someone like CNET. CNET does magazine technology stories. There are a couple of other sites that, again, once you start downloading programs, you're going to recognize who the main players are, obviously, but you'll also start recognizing the well-known sites that are trustworthy. PC Magazine is another, and I'm not favoring them, I'm just mentioning off the top of my head. PC Magazine has stories like this all the time, and they have, as well, reviews of different software. And my goodness, the internet is certainly filled with people's opinion.
Howard Schwartz, Executive Communications Director of the Better Business Bureau, serving Connecticut, has been our guest. Howard, as always, thanks for joining us on Front and Center.
Dan, it's a pleasure. And if people want to reach us, bbb.org/Connecticut, spelled out. And our number is 860-740-4500.
Terrific.